I'd like to invite you to turn now in the Bible to Mark's Gospel, chapter 15. You'll find a copy of the Bible underneath the seats in the basket there. It's on page 69 of the New Testament, and it takes us to that second journey around the city of Jerusalem. On Palm Sunday, Jesus travelled into the city, and of course, early in the Good Friday morning, he travelled back out of it in very different circumstances. So picking up the story in Mark's Gospel, chapter 15, at verse 15, as I say, page 69 of the New Testament, if you've got one of our Good News Bibles. At the end of his trial, it says that Pilate wanted to please the crowd, and so he set Barabbas free for them, and then had Jesus whipped and handed him over to be crucified. And the soldiers took Jesus inside to the courtyard of the governor's palace and called together the rest of the company and put a purple robe on Jesus and made a crown out of thorny branches and put it on his head. And they began to salute him, saying, "Long live the King of the Jews," and beat him over the head with a stick and spat on him and fell on their knees and bowed down to him. When they'd finished mocking him, they took off the purple robe and put his own clothes back on him and led him out to crucify him. And on the way, they met a man named Simon, who was coming from the city into the country, coming into the city from the country, and the soldiers forced him to carry Jesus' cross. Simon was from Cyrene and was the father of Alexander and Rufus. And they took Jesus to a place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. And I want just to stop there for this morning. We'll read the rest of that story on Good Friday and remember what happened then. But I want to stop there and just think about this man, Simon from Cyrene, who appears there in verse 21. On the way, they met a man called Simon, who was coming into the city from the country, and the soldiers forced him to carry Jesus' cross. Simon was from Cyrene and was the father of Alexander and Rufus. I want to focus on Simon and ask just a very simple question. Why is he here? Why does the story of Simon's involvement in Jesus' journey from Jerusalem to Golgotha appear not just in Mark chapter 15, but also in Matthew's Gospel and Luke's Gospel? Out of all the things that happened that day that were so important and significant, why was this bit included? Why was Simon important enough to get this triple mention? Well, there are a number of possible reasons, and one is simply because that's what happened, because Simon was there and people saw him. What we have in the Gospel are eyewitness accounts of historical events which described what the people who were actually there at the time saw unfolding in front of their eyes. So the stories include local colour and factual detail. Jesus was proceeding in a northerly direction when the weight of the cross became too much for him, and a person known as Simon, who came from Cyrene in North Africa and who you can identify as the father of Rufus and Alexander, was press-ganged by the soldiers into carrying the cross. The original storyteller was there at the time. He hasn't just heard by word of mouth at second or fourth or 25th hand that Jesus was crucified and therefore assumed that he must have had to walk out to Golgotha and made up the story to suit. He was there at the time. And by naming one of the others who was there and giving us his address from Cyrene and his family connections, the names of his children, he's really inviting those who are listening to his story to say, if you don't believe what I'm saying, go and check up the facts for yourself, because there's someone else who was actually there. Simon appears in the story simply because he was there. There is a second possible reason for Simon appearing, and that's simply because his presence emphasizes for us the physical weakness of Jesus. It's not surprising that he wasn't able to carry the heavy crossbeam all the way to Golgotha because he'd been up all night. He had been at least at two different trials or three different trials by the Jewish authorities, King Herod and Pontius Pilate, emotionally exhausted before Pilate ordered that he be whipped or scourged. And then the soldiers abused him in the way that we heard earlier. The man was absolutely shattered by the time they put the cross over his shoulders and told him to carry it out to Golgotha. And normally this part of the process, the carrying of your own cross through the streets, was part of the ritual humiliation. It was really to make the experience as awful for you as it possibly could be. So it wasn't out of sympathy for Jesus that the soldiers got someone else to carry the cross for him. It was because they wanted to get the job done and realized that if they waited for Jesus, they'd wait all day and longer because he just wasn't able to take it any further. And so they pressed ganged Simon into action. And what that reminds us is that we need to drive out of our minds any picture of a superhuman Jesus, of a Jesus relaxed and smiling, suntanned and healthy looking on the cross, smiling wisely down on those who were before him, either supernaturally because he was the Son of God, incapable of feeling the pain, or else with truly magnificent self-preservation, pretending that it didn't hurt. This was a beaten man, driven to and well beyond exhaustion, incapable of pretending anything, already suffering terribly even before the nails were driven home. Simon appears in the story to remind us that Jesus could not have done, could not have borne anything more. But what I want to suggest to you this morning is that there is a third reason why Simon appears in the story. And it's because what the soldiers forced Simon to do that early morning dramatically enacts Jesus' own teaching about discipleship. If you turn back in the Gospel three or four pages to Mark chapter 8, in verse 34, you will see that it says there, Jesus says, "Anyone who wants to come with me must forget self, carry their cross, and follow me." And then in verse 21 of chapter 15, the soldiers forced Simon to carry Jesus' cross. And perhaps as the eyewitness who is telling us the story saw that acted out in front of him, the actions brought the words of Jesus to mind and drove them home and said to him, "This is what it means to be a disciple of Jesus." And so the image stuck. It's quite interesting to compare the three different accounts given to us by Matthew, Mark, and Luke of the story about Simon. A bit of background here is that most Bible scholars agree that Mark's gospel was the first of the three to be written. He put his story down on paper or papyrus first of all. And so when Matthew and Luke came along, they had the advantage of already having a copy of Mark's version of the story in front of them. They weren't starting from scratch. Someone else had made a beginning. So what Matthew was able to do, and Luke, was take Mark's gospel and read it and say, "Yes, that's important. We'll keep that bit. But he's put in a bit too much detail, too much information there. We'll score that bit out. We'll edit it down a bit." And also, I remember this other story which Jesus told but Mark hasn't included. Or someone else has reminded me of their memory of particular events, so we'll add that in as well. So Mark comes first, and Matthew and Luke cut out the bits of Mark they thought they didn't need and added in the extras that they thought were important. And the result is that Mark's gospel is the shortest of the three. It's only 16 chapters, where Luke is 24 and Matthew is 28. Mark's gospel is overall the shortest of the three, but when you come to any one individual story, Mark's version of that story is usually the longest, because he's thrown everything into it and the other two have cut it down. So, for example, as you can see, Mark tells us about Simon of Cyrene in 39 words when it's translated into English, and Matthew cuts that down to just 22. He simply says they met a man from Cyrene named Simon, thinking unimportant the detail that Simon was coming into the city from the country. But interestingly, when Luke comes to add to or subtract from Mark's version of event, he keeps that detail in, that Simon was going into the city from the country. And then also adds an extra comment, as if he is saying, I've got it, Mark. I understand what you're trying to say or what you're trying to show us here. Because he adds that extra detail that they made him carry the cross behind Jesus. You see the point? That Mark and Luke are driving home not simply that Simon carried the cross, but that he turned around in order to do so. Would someone get Margaret a glass of water? He turned around in order to do so. He had been going into the city, but they made him turn round and go the other way. Maybe Mark is remembering what Jesus said when he came and began preaching the good news. He said, turn away from your sins. Or we read a couple of weeks ago in the middle of Matthew's gospel that he was distressed to notice that the people in the towns and villages in which he had performed most of his miracles did not turn away from their sins. And Jesus said, anyone who wants to come with me must forget self, carry their cross, and follow me. So no wonder this incident stuck in Mark's mind. What Simon did on the way to Golgotha is a dramatic presentation of Christian discipleship. So what I want you to do is to picture that scene of Mark, of Simon carrying the cross, and ask yourself the question, what does discipleship involve? What are we being shown that it means? And the first of the three things I think we're being shown here is that discipleship involves self-denial. It involves that change of direction. Simon hadn't planned a visit to Golgotha that day. Quite the opposite, we're told. He was heading into the city. We don't know why, but we can probably guess. He was probably going to the Passover festival that was being celebrated there. In fact, probably a little bit more than that, as a pilgrim from North Africa, that's where Cyrene is, many miles from Jerusalem, he was quite probably making a once-in-a-lifetime trip to be there for the Passover and that special occasion. So he was almost at the end of a long-awaited journey, with his mind full of the psalms of ascent that the pilgrims sang on their way into Jerusalem, and all the wonderful things that would be part of that religious festival. But whether that was his reason or not, for whatever reason he was going into Jerusalem, he had to give it up. He had to turn round and he had to go in the opposite direction instead. Now, Simon, of course, had no choice. Half a dozen very big Roman soldiers with very sharp spears and swords forced him to do something that he maybe didn't want to do and wouldn't otherwise have done. Simon had no choice. But neither do those who believe in Jesus. Think of Jesus' teaching during that final week in the temple, what we call Holy Week, and think what he said. What did he say about the widow whom he saw coming up to the offering plate and putting her last 2 copper pennies, the widow's mite, all that she had to live on, into the offering bowl? He commended her because she had given up everything. Or what did he say to the taxpayers who were worried about whether they should pay what the Roman Empire demanded of them? He said, "Give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, the coin with his head stamped upon it, but also give to God what belongs to him. Give to God what is stamped with his image," which means give to God yourself, all that you are. There's nothing left over to do what you want with when you have given it all to Jesus. And then they said to him, "Jesus, tell us, what is the most important command of all?" And Jesus says, "It is to love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself." And what is love but self-denial? Saying that the other person, God or your neighbor, matters more to you than you matter to yourself. So you cannot be a follower of Jesus and then stick to your original plans, carrying on doing what you had been doing before. He might not want to move you on immediately to the other side of the world or even to the other side of the street from where you're living now, but he will want you to start thinking of and treating differently all the people that you normally meet. So we need to think of Simon carrying the cross and say to ourselves that if there is anything in our lives that we are not willing to deny ourselves in order to follow Jesus, then we are not ready to be his disciples. It means self-denial. But secondly, it also means sharing in Jesus' shame. As we said earlier, the Romans made criminals carry their cross in order to make a public exhibition of them. They paraded them through the streets in disgrace so that people could spit at them and mock at them and abuse them and really rub it in that they were truly awful, worthless people who deserved to be treated with utter contempt. And that is what would have happened to Jesus and would have happened to Simon too, as he carried the cross close behind Jesus, and some of the spittle and some of the blows that were aimed at Jesus would have fallen on Simon too. And the foul language and abusive words would have wounded his ears and hurt his feelings too. Simon, of course, had no choice. But neither do those who believe in Jesus. As long as we live in a world which is in the grip of wealth, then those who choose to give things away will always be looked on as poor. And as long as we live in a world gripped by self-satisfaction and the me-first culture, then the one who chooses to serve will always be looked upon as weak. And as long as we live in a world that is gripped by popularity and everyone doing what is fashionable and accepted and normal together, the one who stands out against the crowd will always stand alone. And as long as we live in a world where the one absolute value is total commitment to the acceptance of everything, and not daring to challenge what anybody else believes or thinks or says or does, then the one person who believes that something matters because it is true will always be the only intolerable person in that society. And the gospel story is that Jesus left all the wealth of heaven to come and live on earth as a servant and stand alone at the end against sin and death and claim that he alone was the way, the truth, and the life, and that no one could come to his Father except by him. It's hardly surprising that the Palm Sunday crowd who sang his praises when he'd only just arrived turned against him and shouted, "Crucify," once they got to know him properly. And so you too cannot be a follower of Jesus and keep your reputation intact, any more than Simon could have strolled through the crowd behind Jesus, whistling and carefree, as if there had been no cross in his back and no condemned man in front of him. So you and I need to ask ourselves, is there anything that we are not prepared to put up with in order to follow Jesus? Because if there is, we are not yet ready to be his disciples. And then thirdly, picking up your cross is something which lasts for the rest of your life. Now, for criminals carrying their cross to the place of crucifixion, of course, the rest of their life was not going to be very long. Taking up their cross was the second last thing they would ever do. It was a life sentence before the death sentence. So there was no point in having any plans for afterwards. There was no point in looking around and saying it'd be quite nice to stop for a while and go and do that instead. There was no point in saying I'd better get on with this hateful task so that I can get it over and done with and do something else instead. This is what they would do for the rest of their life. Not for Simon, of course. For him, discipleship was only an act, something he was forced into over a short distance for a little while. For him, it wasn't really significant self-denial, because after a few hundred meters, he would put the cross down and turn round again and go back into the city and take up and carry on where he'd left off. And it wasn't really personal shame. Even the spits and the blows and the curses were not aimed at him and would stop as soon as he left Jesus behind and slipped back into anonymity, never to be heard of or spoken about again. Except, of course, that isn't what happened, because we are talking about him this morning. Simon of Cyrene is a famous man. Pictures and paintings and stories enshrined in the Word of God. For one reason only. Not because of anything clever he did, or wise he said, or beautiful he made, or big that he organized, or important that he achieved, but because of his connection with Jesus, because he took up the cross. And for that, he will be remembered forever. Many years later, when Paul wrote his letter to the Christians in Rome that appears as the sixth book of the New Testament, these words come at the end of his letter in chapter 16, verse 13. I send greetings to Rufus, that outstanding worker in the Lord's servant, and to his mother, who always treated me like a son. I send greetings to Rufus. Simon, according to Mark's gospel, was the father of Alexander and Rufus. And Mark's gospel, we know, is based on Peter's preaching. And Peter, we know, preached in Rome. So maybe the reason that Matthew and Luke, when they came to copy Mark's story, didn't include the fact that Simon was the father of Alexander and Rufus was because they didn't know who Alexander and Rufus were. But Mark did. And so did Peter. And so did Paul, because they were there at the time, hearing Peter's preaching, reading Paul's letter, committed members of the Christian church. Now, maybe that's too many maybes. Alexander and Rufus and Simon were all popular names at the time, and it might just be a coincidence. But if we're indulging in the maybes, let's have two more, just in case it's right. Maybe it was while he was carrying the cross behind Jesus, just as an act, just pretending to be a disciple. Maybe it was while he was being spat upon and shouted at and bullied and abused, with 99% of them wishing he could be almost anywhere else instead, that it suddenly occurred to him, Simon, that the man in front of him probably felt the same and didn't want to be there either. Maybe didn't deserve it either. And then there came to him that strange conclusion that wherever Jesus was where he wanted to be for the rest of his life. And his own plans, whatever he'd been heading into the city to do, suddenly seemed to be less important. And his reputation didn't matter so much, so that when the time came to put the cross down and turn round and go away without it, it felt as though something that belonged to him was missing. And even when he was heading back into the city, leaving Jesus behind, he was still following Jesus. And that's why he and his family were still following him in Rome 30 years later. And maybe, if that is the way it works, as we think of that man who shouldn't have had to carry the cross, Simon, Jesus, as we think of his self-denial, saying, "Not my will, but yours be done." And as we think of his shame and disgrace, his humble life, and his early death, it will occur to us that anywhere we might be, and anyone we are with, will never be enough if we are not there with Jesus. Anyone who wants to come with me must forget himself, herself, carry their cross, and follow me. For whoever wants to save their own life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. Do you know what really matters about Simon? And what makes him great and famous? It's not even the fact that his name is one of the few dozen that appears in the gospel story, or that maybe his son name appears at the end of the letter to Rome. What really matters is this, that his name is written in the book of life. and that he is known to Jesus as one who took up his cross and did it, put it down, denying himself, bearing the shame for the rest of his life. Are you willing to take up your cross and be his disciple? We're going to take some time just of quiet reflection to think about that. As we do so, our offerings for the work of the church will be received. There'll be time to talk to your friends over lunch after the service. Let's talk to God about Jesus now.